The headlines this hour. A senior Iranian commander says the Israeli regime will be forced to leave the occupied Palestinian territories in a humiliating way. The police crime sentencing bill in the UK is facing a storm of controversy amid concerns that it targets civil liberties. We'll have a report from London. And in Canada, a mass grave containing remains of 215 children has been found at the site of a former residential school for Indigenous children. Thanks for joining us. The commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says new Palestinian generations must make a plan on running the entire Palestinian territories based on the pre-1967 border. Brigadier General Ismail Khani says such a plan is backed by the International Resistance Front and the Islamic Revolution. He said that running the whole territories by the Palestinians is a divine promise that will happen in the near future. He also hailed the Palestinian youth producing resources inside their country that helped them in the resistance against Israel. Khani underlined that the Israeli regime will be forced to leave the occupied territories in a humiliating way. The funeral procession has been held in the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, where a Palestinian gunned down by Israeli forces during protests against settlement expansion. The funeral was held in the village of Baita, where 28-year-old Zakaria Hamayel was shot dead by Israeli troops. He was struck by a bullet in the chest. Hamayel was among a group of Palestinians protesting the expansion of Israeli settlements. Dozens of demonstrators were also wounded by Israeli forces. In recent weeks, tensions have been running high in the occupied territories, as Israel has intensified its crackdown against Palestinian protesters. The Palestinians are outraged at the regime's eviction plan in Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood and its restrictions at the Al-Aqsa Mosque there. The recent deadly Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip has also added to the Palestinians' anger. Israeli actions against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip will come under the microscope. The UN has launched an investigation into Israel's devastating onslaught against Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are still reeling from the most recent Israeli onslaught against the coastal territory. Such scenes of destruction are seen throughout Gaza, with many families camping near their flattened homes. It could take many months before these ruined buildings are rebuilt. Israel's devastating onslaught left scores of Palestinians, including dozens of children, dead. The war was another stark reminder of how brutal the regime can be in dealing with the people it has subjugated for many decades. The Israelis argued during the operation that they were trying to wipe out resistance groups and their capabilities. But that's implausible because the sheer number of civilian casualties and horrific scenes of destruction of residential buildings leave no doubt that the regime committed numerous crimes and violations during its latest war. On Thursday, the United Nations Human Rights Council voted to launch an international investigation into the war. The draft resolution was presented by Pakistan on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations. Pakistan's ambassador to the OIC, Khalil Hashmi, who was speaking on behalf of the organization, sharply criticized Israel's supporters. He blasted Israel's allies for shielding the occupier from global accountability and providing arms and ammunition for its widely reported war crimes and crimes of apartheid against the Palestinian people.
Before the resolution was adopted on Thursday, the UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet told the Rights Council that deadly Israeli strikes in Gaza might constitute war crimes. She said that Israel's strikes in Gaza caused widespread destruction of civilian infrastructure and fatalities. Her comments seem to have angered the Israelis.
United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet had tough words for Israel. She rejected Israeli claims that the destroyed buildings in Gaza were hosting members of the Palestinian resistance groups or used for military purposes. Meanwhile, the UN rights chief also criticized Hamas for firing rockets at Israeli cities, saying it constituted, quote, a clear violation of international humanitarian law. Thursday's announcement of an international investigation into alleged crimes committed during the 11-day war seems to have enraged the Israelis. The regime was quick to reject the decision, saying it would not cooperate with the probe. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, on the other hand, welcomed the investigation. The United States, which has observer status and no vote at the Geneva Forum, refrained from speaking at the special session. The investigators will have a broad mandate to look into all alleged violations. The probe will cover not just the Gaza Strip, but also the occupied West Bank and the Israeli cities, which came under retaliatory rocket attacks by Palestinian resistance groups. Future findings of the independent investigation are expected to once again mount pressure on the Israeli regime. But will its allies allow any meaningful action against it? The U.S. in particular has been extremely supportive of Tel Aviv. Observers believe this unwavering support leaves no room for the U.S. to want to be a mediator between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
Obviously, for people in Palestine, for many, many countries in the world, the notion of the United States being a mediator is simply a derisory. It's a joke, and nobody believes it. But for internal domestic consumption, that's important. It also is a fig leaf for Europeans, particularly the British, but others, to say, well, the United States is in charge and we don't have to do anything. But I think increasingly, and we see that, increasingly the United States is no longer considered to be a mediator. The Palestinians, for sure, cannot continue to do this. Abbas cannot continue to agree to these things, and that's obvious.
There have been several protests throughout the UK outside of weapon manufacturing factories that have been supplying arms to the Israeli regime. Ahmed Kabaya went to the most recent one in the British northern town of Blackburn.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters gathered outside the BAE Systems factory in Blackburn in the north of England to call upon the weapons manufacturer to stop supplying components for F-35 fighter jets that have been used in a recent bombardment of Gaza.
BAE, which is one of the largest companies in the UK supplying arms, parts of jets, fighter jets, to the Israeli terrorist state, which is bombing children, killing innocent people, and BAE is also funding other oppressive regimes like Saudi Arabia, and their arms are destroying the lives of innocent people.
The protest came on the back of one of the largest pro-Palestine demonstrations in British history on Saturday, and similar demonstrations throughout the week led by Palestine Action Group, who have been protesting outside the Israeli-owned Elbit Systems factory that provides drones, weapons, and military hardware to the Israeli army.
We've seen protests in Leicester, Tamworth, Oldham, and today in Blackburn as the anger amongst the British public begins to swell at the thought that British weapons are being used by the Israeli army to kill Palestinian children.
They're shooting kids, murdering little children. If that was their children, what would they say? So us lot standing here, we're going to stand out here and we're going to make noise for our people, our brothers and sisters are being oppressed. Free, free Palestine!
The name of the Jewish people is being misused. The term anti-Semite, so-called anti-Semite, is being thrown around. Anyone who dare criticise strongly what the Zionists are doing is labelled as a Jew hater, and it's not true.
It's become increasingly clear that the British government's unwavering support for Israel is not representative of the feeling on the ground, with more than 383,000 Brits calling on their government to sanction the Israeli regime for their crimes against the Palestinian people. But while the UK remains complicit through the hundreds of millions of pounds worth of weapons sold to the Israeli army, some might wonder if the UK should also be held accountable. Ahmed Cabello, Blackburn.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. In the UK, the police crime sentencing and courts bill is close to becoming law, with the government arguing that they need more power to break down unlawful protests. Opponents to the move, however, maintain that the plans in reality will target civil liberties, the legitimate right to protest, and the right of assembly, which many argue should be a cornerstone of British democracy. Richard Sudan has more.
Activists are galvanizing opposition to the government's planned controversial policing bill, which is now close to becoming law, highlighting a number of issues as more Kill the Bill protests are planned.
It's a massive assault on our democratic right to protest in this country. And let's be clear here, this is specifically aimed at the environmental movement, thousands of young people on the streets demanding that we tackle the climate emergency, and the Black Lives Matter movement, thousands of young people on the streets demanding justice for black people. And when the government saw these two movements in the summer of last year taking to the streets as they did, they decided that they needed to put in place the most draconian legislation.
Many anticipate a new wave of protest as concerns over the right of assembly grow.
I think this will be the government's poll tax movement moment, and we'll see thousands and thousands and thousands of people in cities right across the country, as we have over the last 3 months, stepping up the campaign against this bill. But it's an absolute disaster for democracy in Britain.
The bill could also have a devastating impact on other marginalised communities in Britain.
This government is conducting a culture war. That's what he's doing. He's trying to undermine and eliminate aspects of black culture, Muslim culture, traveller culture. And when you think that people have had a way of life for thousands of years, and now you're going to introduce legislation, rather than facilitating their way of life as British people within a multicultural democracy, you're actually going to introduce a law that denies them their very way of life.
Criticism of government plans will continue amid fears that the potential damage might be irreversible.
The police crime sentencing and courts bill continues to see mass opposition up and down the country, with experts deeply concerned about the potential long-term impact on civil liberties. Richard Sudam, London.
John White is a political commentator joining us from Edinburgh, and we also have Rodney Shakespeare, who is a commentator and professor of economics, joining us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. Rodney Shakespeare, let me first start with you. There are calls that are being made by many critiquing it, saying that it's really an assault on democracy. Do you see it as an assault on democracy?
Yes, indeed. It's a distressing, indeed, sinister bill. And it comes into the public notice at first when there was a demonstration over the kidnapping and murder of a young lady who was possibly abducted by an officer in uniform. And their heavy-handed policing then was an outrage. And now we have this new legislation aimed at those protesting against climate change, aimed at those who are going to be protesting at the collapse of the global economy, and an interesting one, it'll be aimed at those who will be protesting against what are effectively lies which have been told by the UK and the American government for 70 years over unidentified flying objects, which they've already admitted certainly exist, even though they don't know what they are. And on top of that, this legislation is aimed at suppressing dissent against the imprisonment and the extradition of Julian Assange, a journalist whose only offence was simply to protest against a war crime, namely the machine gunning of Iraqi civilians. This legislation is a disgrace to the United Kingdom.
Well, John White, what angle do you see this in terms of how it may be an assault on democracy and how it's jeopardizing freedoms like the right of assembly?
Well, it was a great American campaigning journalist, Edward R. Murrow, who said that a nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves. And to the extent that this government of wolves, if I can enter a neologism, keeps us sheepified, is the extent to which they're able to maintain their position as the class in power. And this is a direct response to a serious challenge that your package, your reporter, Richard Sudan, eloquently described. First of all, Extinction Rebellion. Secondly, Black Lives Matter. And these protests went further than just protests. These started to challenge the British state, not the government, the state itself, underpinned as it is by the myths surrounding the history of British colonialism and the empire. And when they started attacking statues of venerated figures in the mainstream, such as Cecil Rhodes, such as Edward Colston, the slaver, his statue was toppled in Bristol, and such as Winston Churchill himself, then this is a result. This legislation is a direct result, because they know that when people start to wake up to the reality of British history yesterday, they'll start to wake up to the reality of British society today. And that's a very potent threat. So this is why they've come out with this legislation, and this is why the protest must continue, because this is by far the most pernicious piece of legislation that's ever been passed in the UK in my lifetime.
Okay, thank you very much for that. That was Rodney Shakespeare, commentator and professor of economics, and also thank you, John White, political commentator there from Edinburgh. That brings us to the end of the news review. In Canada, a mass grave containing remains of 215 children, some as young as three, has been found, with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau describing the discovery as heartbreaking. The remains were unearthed at the site of a former residential school for Indigenous children near the town of Kamloops in British Columbia. The bodies belong to the students of the school, but authorities say the cause and timing of their deaths are not known yet. Kamloops Indian Residential School was established in 1890 and closed in 1978. The 2015 investigation to Canada's residential school system concluded that the system, typically run by Christian churches, constituted cultural genocide. The report documented physical abuse, rape, malnutrition, and other atrocities against the school children. It also found that more than 4,000 children died while attending these schools. International human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan says the discovery of bodies of Indigenous students at a former Canadian school is another example of the country's historical anti-Indigenous campaign. And that is World News. To stay with us, a recap of the headlines at the top of the hour. That's bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
People who limit the Quran to worshipping and personal matters haven't understood it. This is a part of a speech delivered on April 14, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the annual Ramadan Quranic meeting. The speech was delivered via video conference with the participation of a number of prominent Quranic reciters.
The Americans want to negotiate in order to impose their own legitimate demands. You should notice that when the Americans continuously speak of their willingness to directly negotiate with Iran, it is not the case that their intention is to accept a legitimate claim. Rather, their purpose for negotiating is to impose an illegitimate claim. Actually, that is what they always do. They do not want to listen to and to accept a truthful claim. In their private meetings with our officials, whose reports are delivered to us by our officials, the Europeans acknowledge that Iran is right about its policy, that the sanctions should be lifted first. We announced that the sanctions have to be lifted first. This is because we are not sure about their promises, as they have broken their promises tens of times already, and as it happens, they sometimes even acted in the exact opposite way. In the present time too, they will do the same. Therefore, they should first do what we ask so that we feel assured of it, and then we will carry out our obligations. Sometimes European negotiators confirm in private meetings that what Iran says is correct and the Iranians are right. But when it comes to decision making, they follow in their America's footsteps. They are not really independent in any way. Subhanallah, hamdalillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, hamdalillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar. As for the Americans, they have a bullying attitude, and they have the tendency to impose their demands. This is their issue. Therefore, the proposals that they put forward are so arrogant and humiliating that one cannot even look at. I hope that by Allah's favor, the officials of the country will move forward with completely open eyes, with a firm heart, with reliance on God, and by whispering the dhikr. For us, Allah suffices, and He is the best disposer of affairs. I hope that God will bestow His blessings on them so that they will make the nation happy. I hope that Allah the Exalted will bestow His blessings and will shower His rain of mercy on our dry and thirsty lands, and that He will confer His worldly and otherworldly blessings on the masses of the people and the mujahids of the path of the truth. I hope that He will associate the immaculate soul of our magnanimous Imam with His saints, that He will associate the pure souls of martyrs with the martyrs of the early Islamic era, that He will send our sincere greetings and sympathies to the Mawla of the world, the Imam of the age. May our hearts be sacrificed for His sake, and that He will help us gain the satisfaction of that esteemed personality and benefit from His prayers. The greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Africa Today.
The brutal war launched recently by the Israeli apartheid regime against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip galvanized African people who raised their voices in support of the oppressed people of Palestine. Numerous demonstrations were held across Africa to express solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities. South Africa's ruling African National Congress Youth League convener explains here on why they came out to express solidarity with Palestinians. Let's take a listen.
As the ANC Youth League, to pledge solidarity with the people of Palestine who have for decades been oppressed by the apartheid state of Israel, there is no difference in the manner in which the Israeli state is acting versus the manner in which the apartheid state used to act. Their latest attack on people who are praying is absolutely atrocious.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today, which is focusing on Africa's support for Palestinians in Gaza who endured 12 days of heavy bombardment by the Israeli apartheid regime. African people have experienced colonialism, apartheid, racism and discrimination perpetrated by Western countries which currently support the Israeli regime, and therefore they have a natural affinity with Palestinians.
Africa slams Israeli apartheid crimes against Palestinians. The Israeli apartheid regime launched a bloody bombing campaign on Gaza on the 10th of May after harassing Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds and attempts to steal their lands in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of the city. The occupying regime announced a unilateral ceasefire on the 21st of May. Atrocities perpetrated by the Israeli regime during this war, especially the killing of innocent women and children, ignited worldwide demonstrations, including spontaneous protest rallies in Africa. Despite attempts by authorities in some countries to stop the rallies, protesters came out in large numbers to express solidarity with Palestinians. This is one such rally in Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
With my brothers and sisters in Palestine. I pray day and night that my sisters and brothers get peace, inshallah.
This the police is arresting me. What did I do? I was protesting. Peaceful demonstration. Peaceful demonstration. Now that's what they did.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa told France 24 that the Israeli war on Gaza reminded him of the apartheid era in his own country.
The images that we've been seeing of people being prevented to move around, of their homes being destroyed, of people being driven out of their homes before they are bombed, of the Israeli soldiers manhandling people, brings back very terrible memories of our own history and apartheid, when people were forcibly moved from their homes, which they'd occupied for generations, when their homes were destroyed. So this, for us, is very close to our own suffering and apartheid.
For more on Africa's condemnation of recent Israeli regime crimes in the besieged Gaza Strip, we have contacted Maureen Kasuku, a member of Kenyans for Palestine, a grassroots network of internationalists standing in anti-colonial solidarity with the Palestinian people. Welcome to the program, Ms. Kasuku.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
We also have with us here today Hussein Khalid, who is the executive director of Haki Africa, a human rights organization based in Mombasa, Kenya. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Khalid.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start off with Ms. Maureen Kasuku. Now, we've seen spontaneous demonstrations across Africa in solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities. What's your take on this?
What we're witnessing right now in Africa is African internationalism in action. Africans have always been the vanguard when it comes to resistance movements. We have always been at the forefront in condemning racist ideologies, including Zionism. We understand what it means to live under colonialism. We understand what it means to live under apartheid. And we understand the struggle for self-determination. That's why Africans all over the continent are standing in solidarity with the people of Palestine, because their struggles are also our struggles. So we understand what exactly they are going through, and that is why you see that the whole continent has stood up against Israeli apartheid in Palestine.
Anti-Israeli and pro-Palestinian rallies have been held in several African countries, including South Africa, Kenya, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Libya. In Kenya, apart from the capital Nairobi, protesters also gathered in the coastal city of Mombasa in a show of their support for Palestinians. They denounced Israeli regime crimes against the Palestinians. A protester in the city of Mombasa voices her support here for Palestinians.
My message today is we all need to stand with Palestine, and whatever is happening, we are all not safe for whatever is happening. So muhimu hapa, we just pass the message that humanity is the key.
Now, Mr. Khalid, can you tell us more about the rallies which were recently held in Kenya to condemn atrocities by Israeli apartheid regime in Gaza?
The rallies in Kenya, as you know, is the same case across the African continent, are spontaneous. It's groups of youth who decide to come out collectively in different cities, in different villages, and they feel they want to show their solidarity because they believe that this is a just cause. The good thing about the protest is that they are multi-religious. So it's not just Muslims who are coming out. It's Muslims and Christians and Hindus who believe that justice must prevail anywhere in the world.
The occupation of Palestine by the Israeli apartheid regime reminds many in Africa of their own struggle during the colonial era. Addressing an African Union summit last year, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa even compared the so-called peace plan for Palestine being pushed by the U.S. to the Bantustan system, which was implemented by the apartheid regime in his own country.
I'd like to say, with regards to the U.S.-inspired plan for the Palestinians, that as I listened to it and as I read everything that's written about it, it brought to mind a horrible history that we as South Africa have gone through, that the apartheid regime once imposed a Bantustan system on the people of South Africa without consultation with them and with all the oppressive elements that that plan had. As I listened to the Arab League and as I listened to our colleagues from Palestine, it sounds like this plan, one, has not been consulted with all the people that matter, especially the Palestinians, and it sounds like a Bantustan type of construct.
Well, we had the South African President Ramaphosa comparing the situation in Palestine under Israeli apartheid regime to that of South Africa during the apartheid regime. Now, Mr. Khalid, what are some of the commonalities between the current struggle for the liberation of Palestine and struggle for independence in Africa?
I believe in Africa, we have gone through a similar experience. Many years back, decades ago, our forefathers fought for the freedom of our countries. And so seeing the same thing happening in Palestine, I believe we can draw parallels with what we went through. And that is why you are seeing spontaneous protests and demonstrations across the African continent in support of the Palestinian cause and to call for the end of oppression by the Israeli government. Here in Kenya, the Palestinian support movement is strong. We have seen protests and demonstrations in major cities, including in Nairobi and Mombasa. And many people are out there tweeting, using social media, Facebook, Instagram, to send their message of solidarity to Palestinians.
The African Union Commission Chairperson, Moussa Faki Mohammed, has strongly condemned the Israeli regime forces' violent attacks against worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque and bombing of the Gaza Strip. Mohammed reiterated the continued AU support for the Palestinian people in their legitimate quest for an independent and sovereign state.
Now, Maureen, African Union has condemned Israeli regime atrocities in Palestine. Now, is condemnation enough? And what further action do you think should be taken by the AU in support of Palestine?
I don't think condemnation is enough, because often these African governments offer lip service to the people of Palestine, but then continue to maintain cozy relationships with Israel. They purchase weapons from Israel, they purchase surveillance material from Israel, and these weapons and these cyber espionage tools are meant, to maintain repressive regimes in Africa. So they give money to the Israeli regime, and this money is used to strengthen the Israeli regime in occupied Palestine. So condemnation is not enough. I think African governments should cut bilateral ties with Israel.
Well, it remains to be seen if African countries will listen to the people and take tangible action in boycotting the apartheid regime in Israel.
Kenya, Niger, and Tunisia are three African countries that are currently non-permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. Citizens of these countries expect their countries to take a firm stand in condemning Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
Now, Mr. Khalid, what role can these African countries, which are members of the UN Security Council, play in support of Palestinians?
I believe that my country, Kenya, together with Nigeria and Tunisia, who are presently non-permanent members of the UN Security Council, can do much more to ensure Palestinian people live in peace. As African countries who have gone through colonial rule for many years, I believe that Kenya, Nigeria, and Tunisia should push the United Nations to send a peacekeeping mission in Palestine to ensure that no more rights or violations of any kind of Palestinians continues unabated. We believe that as African countries, we can make a bigger voice, we can have a bigger voice in what is happening in Palestine, and we can demand for accountability by the Israeli troops.
Thanks a lot for that, Mr. Khalid, and I'm sure you meant they are Niger and not Nigeria.
Africa slams Israeli apartheid crimes against Palestinians.
Now, in a country like Morocco, despite the kingdom's move to normalize ties with the Israeli apartheid regime, the masses are clearly with the oppressed nation of Palestine. Now, what message does this send to the monarchy in these North African states?
I think that Morocco's monarchy is clearly disconnected to its people. We know for sure that Morocco has had a number of protests where the people have come out openly to condemn the atrocities that are committed against the Palestinians and to demand that Israel immediately end its aggression on the Palestinian people. To see that the government of Morocco remains quiet, remains silent, even when the large majority of its population are standing in solidarity with Palestinians, is a big embarrassment to the monarchy. It clearly shows there is a disconnect, and I think it's about time for the people of Morocco to consider whether the kingdom is helping them as a country to move forward. I believe that at every given point in time, there comes a time when the people have to decide.
South Africans vividly remember the Sharpeville massacre as an event that marked a turning point against the apartheid regime. During this gruesome massacre in March 1960, the apartheid regime forces gunned down 250 black protesters. The recent war waged on Gaza by the apartheid regime in Tel Aviv has been compared by some to the Sharpeville massacre, which eventually led to the downfall of the white minority rule in South Africa.
Now, Mr. Khalid, the brutal Israeli war on Gaza has been likened to the Sharpeville massacre during the apartheid era in South Africa. Now, this massacre was one of the events that triggered the eventual downfall of the South African apartheid regime. Now, do you see the same fate befalling the Israeli apartheid regime?
I am a human rights activist, and I know that oppression never lasts forever. Any other day, justice will always prevail. And we know for sure that freedom in Palestine is coming. This is something, as a human rights activist, as a human rights defender, we know that wherever there are atrocities, it can never last forever. We believe that this is the beginning of an end to this oppression, and we believe that all we need is the world to stand together against oppression. All we need is the people of Palestine to remain steadfast. All we need is the people of Africa to remember that they were in the same situation just a few decades away, so that they can stand together and champion for the rights of Palestinians.
Now, momentum has also been gaining for the international movement to boycott, divest from, and sanction Israel, known as BDS, in support of Palestinian national liberation. A similar tactic of international boycott played a crucial role in delegitimizing the South African apartheid system.
Recently, the labor movements joined the South African BDS coalition at the Durban Harbor to support dock workers who refused to offload cargo from an Israeli container ship in a stand against the regime's atrocities in Palestine.
Dozens of South African dock workers picketed at a port in Durban on Friday as they showed their support for Palestinians. The action comes after they had attempted to boycott offloading cargo from an Israeli ship. The Zim Shanghai vessel arrived at the port on Thursday, while unions and workers were negotiating with the country's transport authority to block exports coming from Israel.
The international boycott of South Africa during the apartheid era was instrumental in the eventual downfall of this regime. Will the BDS movement also be instrumental in the collapse of the Israeli apartheid regime?
Yes, I do believe that the BDS movement worldwide will play a huge role in the collapse of the Israeli regime in occupied Palestine. The Kenyans for Palestine movement has its own BDS strategy, which seems to be working very well.
South African anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela and his party, the African National Congress, remained on a United States terrorism watch list until 2008. Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher dismissed the African National Congress, ANC, as a typical terrorist organization and refused to back sanctions against the South African government that pursued the notorious policy of apartheid.
Now, Mr. Khalid Hussein, Western countries branded Nelson Mandela a terrorist, and even his party, ANC, was listed as a terrorist organization. History is repeating itself in Palestine as Hamas, Islamic Jihad resistance movements, and their leaders have been branded as terrorists by Western countries. Are you surprised?
We as Kenya, we know that our forefathers who fought for our independence were initially called terrorists by the colonialists. As you've rightfully mentioned, Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, ANC party, which fought for the independence of South Africa, were equally called terrorists by the colonialists. So this, and the Western government. So this is a trend. History is full of these examples. And we believe that anyone who is standing firm and fighting for the rights of their people and fighting for an end to human rights violations is a freedom fighter. So I believe that people should continue in the struggle to fight for human rights. Palestinians should continue to struggle to fight for their independence, and history will judge them right.
In the Senegalese capital, Dakar, thousands of protesters took part in a demonstration to lend support to oppressed Palestinians. One interesting aspect of this rally in Dakar was the participation of Palestinians who were forced by the Israeli apartheid regime to leave their homeland and have now been granted asylum in Senegal. Let's take a listen.
It's really heartwarming. It's really amazing. And at the same time, I'm communicating to my family back home. See, a lot of people are coming out for you. It makes them stronger. It makes them, like, more patient. You know? It's amazing.
It's something great. It's just something unbelievable. I'm so glad. I'm so proud of the Senegalese people. And I know how they love Palestine. And I know how they love Al-Aqsa.
Khalid, our last question to you. Now, after the mass pro-Palestinian protests in Africa, should we expect African governments to pile more pressure on the Israeli apartheid regime and force it to end its occupation of Palestine?
For African countries that have lived through this kind of experiences, it needs to be more than just condemning the actions that we are seeing presently. We as human rights defenders, we as civil society actors, are pushing our government to do more than just condemn. We want to see action taken. We want to see our government standing up and defending freedom of any person, whether it's Palestinians or anyone in the world. These kinds of atrocities are not supposed to be happening. And that is why we are saying African countries need to do more, because we know what these kinds of atrocities mean. Our forefathers have been through that, and we expect them to do more, to do better.
In Cape Town, South Africa, the rally in support for Palestine was organized by Al-Quds Foundation and several pro-Palestinian organizations and political parties.
Well, mostly I stand here as a father. My son today is turning 4 years old, Mandela Ikram Mandev. And to continuously witness children in Palestine being shot in the back, being put in prison, it really pains our hearts as fathers, as parents, and also as citizens in the Republic of South Africa that have witnessed such brutalities in our past. And we are here today as a family with my wife, my father-in-law, as well as my mother-in-law, to say that we will not rest until we see a free Palestine in our lifetime. And we will speak against the brutality that is meted out against innocent children and women in Palestine. And that is why we are here united as a family today, to charge forward with what Madiba once said, that our freedom is incomplete until the Palestinians are free.
A powerful statement there by Mandla Mandela, who has vowed that he will not rest until Palestine is free. Now, Maureen, you have the last word today in our program. Do you see total emancipation and freedom of Palestine in the near future?
I just want to urge all Africans at home and abroad to stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine, because their struggles are our struggles too. This is African internationalism at play. We must stand against apartheid. We must stand against Zionism, and we will march forward towards the sovereignty of Palestine and all African nations.
Well, we have seen how recent rallies in Africa are a manifestation of Africa's overwhelming support for the liberation of Palestine and condemnation of the Israeli regime. Well, and that wraps it up for this edition of Africa Today. As always, it was great having you, and don't forget to drop us a line through our social media handles. Goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mo'jiza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the exalted, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our listeners, particularly a warm welcome to our listeners to our program, The Man Who Changed the World, and of course Shape All Our Tomorrows. We're speaking about the life and times of Imam Khomeini, may God bless him. And we've reached the point now in this account, of this biographical account, of the second phase of Imam Khomeini, may God bless him, where he is at the stage of influencing the Hawza system. And we're going to, in this program, discuss aspects of the uniqueness not only of the Shia leadership, but also what it takes to become a Marja-i Taqlid and how that is acknowledged. What are the conditions that need to be stipulated for someone to become a complete authority in terms of fiqh, in terms of jurisprudence, to be able to guide the Muslim Ummah properly. And of course we're doing it, discussing this with a background where there is intense oppression against the removal of Islamic values, especially from Iran through the Pahlavi regime. So we are round about, once again, I'd like to introduce my guest who will help me in depth in this discussion, which is Sayyid Taqi Razavi, who is from the Holy Seminaries of Qum. First of all, salam, hello and welcome, Sayyid, to the program.
Alaykum salam, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for giving us your valuable time. Now, Sayyid, we were at that point where you're discussing the second and very important phase of Imam Khomeini's life, may God bless him, where he's going to be acknowledged as an authority. But we've already discussed in the previous program that he is an extraordinary expert in his own right in terms of not only understanding all the Quranic sciences, but he's also, you know, has a broad knowledge of many other philosophies, Western philosophy, astronomy, mathematics, and so many other subjects as well. So he's quite an all-round expert and quite unique talent in that respect. But at the same time, he has this mentality, this psyche of resistance, of martyrdom, that, you know, it comes from the pure line of his lineage from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and especially the seventh Imam, as you mentioned, Imam Musa Kazim. So where do we go from here now in terms of the fact that, you know, these big authorities there already in the Hawza system, like Ayatollah Borajerdi, we've also discussed Ayatollah Madaris, who is at the forefront of the resistance and was eventually martyred by Raza Khan with his blasphemy in terms of removing Islamic values from Iran and, you know, removing hijab and stopping prayer, etc., in public schools. But at the same time, where does this second phase begin, and what are the conditions by which, you know, an authority is acknowledged, especially amongst the school of Ahlul Bayt?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I think throughout Imam Khomeini's time up to this second phase, where we'll talk about how he becomes an Ansmaji Taqlid, the whole Hawza was experiencing revolutionary ulema.
Yes.
You know, real revolutionary ulema.
Great, great
in the sense, like
yes.
Fazla Nuri, like Sheikh Mutin Mudaris. Likewise, but one of the important revolutionary activity, which we briefly referred to in conversation, was the activities of Ayatollah Kashani, for example.
That's right.
And the endorsement of Ayatollah Kashani of the People's Movement.
That's right.
Mohandas
Mossadegh. Yes, who then became Prime Minister, for a short
his
time.
His movement. What were the ulema trying to do in this situation? They were trying to get the people's involvement in a revolt against the oppression.
Yes,
of
because basically, say, we're saying here that, you know, we're talking about the ulama always being in the forefront of restoring the people's rights.
Indeed.
Because they're up against a very oppressive Pahlavi regime, both in the terms of Raza Khan, the father, and Muhammad Raza Khan, the son, of course. He gets installed in a coup d'etat in 1941 by the Allies
to remove Mossadegh.
Yeah, and of course in 1951 in 1953, they do another coup, you know, to remove Mossadegh, especially because he nationalizes the oil industry and bring Mohammad Reza Shah, you know, really to strengthen the Pahlavi regime completely in
but
Iran.
But what they found in doing so, they found that they could raise a puppet in the form of Reza Shah. On one side, but they also found out that there will be an ever-long consistent confrontation with the ulema of the society.
That's correct, yes.
That they will continue to be a sore thumb in their aspirations to get the community against their religious values.
Exactly.
So they've always tried to dictate to this circle, the ulema. And all the time, they've always put a lot of pressure on the ulema to be subservient and subdued to the authority of the Shah.
Exactly.
And be an authority under it. But Imam Khomeini restrained from being so. And what happened, as we need to walk into this part of the discussion, is that as time goes on, whilst Imam Khomeini is learning all these things,
yes.
In 1961, Ayatollah Borajerdi passes
away. That's right. May God
And again, another senior scholar by the name Ayatollah, another Maje, who was Ayatollah Abul Qasim Kashani
Abul
in 1962.
Qasim Kashani, yes.
He passes 16, away.
He passes away as
this
well.
This leaves a vacuum in the Maraje's circle. And there's a convention in the Hawza that when the Marja Taqlid passes away, he who is of a very high level of education leaves his doors open to receive condolences from the public on the demise of the Marja Taqlid.
Okay, right.
This is usually a kind of indicator that I'm accessible to the Marjiyat position.
Right, right.
In other words, people recognize him as well. It's not as if he's kind of barging himself in. Mm-hmm. But this is a convention that he who is the most senior in the community...
Yeah, both amongst the ulama as well as the people,
public.
That they recognize him that, he'll be the next
this
natural
is a procedure.
Successor.
This is a procedure. Mm-hmm. Imam Khomeini did not participate
in
this
procedure.
No, he
didn't. This was the extraordinary
He left his doors... He in fact left his doors closed.
Exactly.
As if
he did the opposite.
He just went and condoled with whoever wanted to condole.
Sure, yeah.